For many of us, seeing the beauty in other people, being kind and compassionate towards other people, that comes pretty easily. But what's really hard is seeing the beauty in ourselves and being kind and compassionate consistently towards ourselves, especially when difficult things happen. Perhaps someone's critical of us, or we make a mistake. We beat up on ourselves. You could call it the inner critic, or that voice in the head that says mean things. Or you could call it self-hatred. What can we do in these circumstances to interrupt this cycle and learn to befriend ourselves consistently? Sounds True has created the Self-Acceptance Project to investigate this question. We've invited the participation of spiritual teachers, psychologists, neuroscientists, visionary writers, all to look at how can we learn to be kind and compassionate towards ourselves on a consistent basis. Thank you for joining us and welcome. In today's episode, I speak with Mark Nepo. Mark is a poet and philosopher who has taught in the fields of poetry and spirituality for over 35 years. He is a New York Times number one best-selling author and has published 13 books and recorded 8 audio projects. With Sounds True, Mark has released the audio series Staying Awake and also a program called Holding Nothing Back, and currently is offering an online course titled A Pilgrimage of the Heart. My name's Tammy Simon, and I'm your host for this series. And in today's episode, I have the pleasure and privilege to speak with Mark Nepo. Welcome, Mark.
Oh, thank you, Tammy. It's great to be a part of this. I think this is a great project.
Well, I'll tell you where I want to start, which is, in your case, someplace a little unusual and different from the other conversations in this series, which is, I was reading in your new book, 7,000 Ways to Listen, in the final chapter, this sentence that really got my attention that I'd like to read to you and to begin our conversation to talk about a bit.
Okay.
Here's the sentence from Mark Nepo. I have been writing for 45 years, poems, stories, journals, dreams, essays, and all of it can be reduced to this phrase, no strangers in the heart.
Yeah, that's been just quite a learning and continual learning for me. And I think this is at the heart of our journey, is we need to discover who we are so we can find that we're at heart the same. And we can't skip over any of that. You know, I find, like, you know, in my life, I think this is very archetypal. I think it's a very ordinary passage. In the first half of life, I, like so many young people, I really was struggling to find my uniqueness. What distinguished me from other people on the path? How could I know that I was me and not be washed away by everyone that I met? And trying to find my gift and then trying to be devoted to it. But as happens, life has other things to say. And sooner or later, you know, for me, it was my cancer journey, now going on 26 years ago, the heat of it. But it can be anything. We don't need some grand life-threatening disease to do it. It can be anything. It can be a sudden change in ambition. It can be the loss of a dream or the finding of someone and then the losing of someone. It could be even something unnameable. But sooner or later, we're broken open. And then it turns around. Then, you know, on the other side of my cancer journey, and as I move further into life, I'm now 62, I really want to look for what I have in common with other living things. And that is affirming. That is brings out my own resilience. And paradoxically, it makes me accept and understand who I am all the more. So, yeah, there are no strangers in the heart. And, you know, it was Longfellow, you know, who isn't often quoted, but Henry Wadsworth Longfellow said, you know, if we truly listen to the sufferings of our enemies, they would no longer be our enemies.
You know, I think part of the reason this phrase struck me so deeply, right, in the heart, in the context of this conversation and this series about self-acceptance, is that when we're feeling often some sense of shame or we're feeling bad about ourselves, we feel like a stranger in our own heart. And I wonder if you could talk some about that, that feeling that we ourselves are a stranger, some part of us is a stranger in our heart.
Well, I think that this, for me, really speaks to the challenge to feel what life gives us all the way through. Often we feel it halfway, and a lot of times because it's painful and it's difficult and it's confusing. So, you know, we don't want to go there. But it's only by going completely through our feelings that we reach that place where we know our own self and we feel how it overlaps with others. So kind of, you know, Rilke has this great line, you know, I am alone, but not alone enough to make every moment holy. I'm alone, but not alone enough to make every moment holy. So, you know, when we hide who we are in our pain of what happens to us, we're kind of in limbo. And we all experience that, you know. I think I have a lifelong pattern, which is, again, not unusual, that when I have been hurt or when I get hurt, my reflex, probably from growing up, is to pull inside until I can get alone and figure out what happened. And then decide if it's safe enough to come back out. Well, what happens, though, is that in that period of retreating, I'm alone, but not alone enough to be connected to all of life. I'm in between. And then when we're like that, you know, we're like a pinball in a pinball machine. We're getting bounced around and we're ducking holes. And when we can feel what is ours all the way through, then we're not exempt from our feelings, but we have some kind of groundedness in the history, the world's history of those feelings. This is why, you know, when I feel a moment of love thoroughly, I am feeling everyone who ever loved. When I'm in a moment of pain, that's my pain, and I not drown in it, but I meet it. Well, I am feeling the river of everyone who ever suffered. And we can't go through any of those experiences, joy or suffering, in that way without deepening and revealing our compassion. And once we do that, not only are we where there are no strangers in the heart, but we are stronger. We are more vulnerable and stronger.
Now, in this self-acceptance series, we've talked to many different meditation teachers, and they've talked about this idea of feeling all the way through, turning towards our difficult emotions. And they describe, just to pull out some common themes, a process of being mindful of physical sensations and accepting them and staying with them. I'm curious for you, as a writer and poet, when you say feeling things all the way through, how do you do that? I mean, someone maybe is having some experience of bouncing off difficult feelings of shame, You know, they touch in and then they bounce off. It's too painful. What's your method for working with that?
Well, I think that for me, it means even when we bounce off, that we keep committed to relaxing and facing the ground of what we feel. It's understandable that when we feel difficult things, we don't want to, you know, it's like, who wants to do that? However, there's nowhere to go because it's in us. So the only thing to do is, after an understandable contraction, after an understandable movement away, cringing, reflexing, retreating, is to relax back open a little further into the depth of who we are. You know, when I was recovering from rib surgery, and it was very true, I think anyone who's been through surgery probably identifies with this, but I was told by wise nurses who'd been doing it forever that the recovery was two steps forward, one step back. And that turned out to be true. And I think emotionally and spiritually, I think that makes sense. You know, so yeah, I can lean into my shame or my fear or my pain, and then I'm going to recoil because it gets difficult. That's okay. Lean back in, two steps forward, one step back. And I think that, so the image that comes for me and why to keep doing this is that, and that's of the ocean. So the ocean, as we know, is all it's surface and depth at the same time. So the top 6 inches or foot maybe out in the depths of the ocean and out in the center of the ocean are always churned up and turbulent and affected by weather. But you go below that, and that depth, while it feels it, it records it, is not moved in the same way as the surface. Well, this is a way to understand our psychology and our spirituality. You know, we are both, you know, a lot of times we would say, oh yeah, I'd like to live just in the depth, thank you. That churned up surface is too much. Well, good luck, you know. We can't do that. Nor can we live just on the surface. We are living, we're living all of it. And so it's understandable that I'm going to be churned up on the surface through the days, through experience. But when I can sink down and feel the depth under any one circumstance, I'm going to be gentler and stronger and more connected to the ocean of all being. And that's kind of what I mean by like feeling our way through, not escaping any one feeling, but feeling the total depth of it so we can find a home. And let me take that for a second, because that moves into what I'd like to at least touch on. And that's when we talk about self-acceptance, you know, I've been giving thought to, well, let's talk a minute what we mean by self and what we mean by acceptance. So when we talk about self, you know, up by the surface is more particularly me and my personality and my particular situation. But when I can drop down to the depth under those waves, the depth of sea under those waves of being, well, now I'm connected to where myself connects with all self. And that is a resource, and I think that's what mindfulness does. I think that's what meditation does. I think that it allows us to be who we are in the context of all being. So the small self touches on its edge into the deeper self with a capital S, which, God, you know, every tradition has a name for that. In Hinduism, it's Atman. It's Dharma in Buddhism. It's, you know, the Holy Ghost, the Holy Spirit in Christianity. In Judaism, it's the indwelling presence of God. And when we're cut off from that, it's a rougher ride. So accepting self means accepting that, or namaste, that part of the universe that resides in us, out of which our personality arises.
Now, I know, Mark, that you make a distinction between striving for any type of perfection in life and what you call wholeheartedness. And I wonder if you can talk a little bit about that and what you think wholeheartedness is in the context, really, of this discussion about self-acceptance, too.
Sure. And I think this starts to bring us to what is very difficult, especially in our time, and that is the acceptance of our full humanity. That means warts and all. That means our frustrations, our difficult traits, as well as our gifts. And so we've been, I think, miseducated. And actually, you know, one of our fellow Sounds True compadres, Neil Douglas Klotz. Klotz. You know, he did that amazing book, which I think he's put into a Sounds True program about prayers for the cosmos, where he translated sayings of Jesus into from the original Aramaic that he spoke. And there are some profound discoveries there. And the one that is pertains to our conversation is that somewhere in the sayings of Jesus, it is said that he put forth, "Be thou perfect." Well, Neil discovered that that word in Aramaic was mistranslated, probably in England in Elizabethan times or whenever the King James Version of the Bible came forward. But originally, that word translated as wholehearted. Be thou wholehearted. Well, and there's a fork in the road of 2,000 years of education. Be thou perfect and be thou wholehearted are very different things. So being perfect brings us down to a point. It has us exclude flaws and mistakes and try to hone our virtues to a point of pure living, which in my experience is really impossible and actually dysfunctional to try to live that way. Instead, being wholehearted is give yourself over to the entire incarnation of being human, which no one escapes. Lean into it, feel it all, open your heart enough so that what comes in from life mixes inside the depth of who you are and continues to shape you. That's what it means wholehearted. So I think self-acceptance refers to the courage, and it's a quiet courage, to accept this journey of meeting life with who we are completely and being open to how we're shaped. The way a shore is shaped by the surf.
As I'm listening, Mark, I'm imagining this response. You know, I like 90% of the ocean, but 10% of it, I just wish it would go away. That it would go away in me. This part of me would go away. So I hear what you're saying, and I'll be wholehearted and embrace this 90%, but could this 10% just please be banished and not part of the picture, and because it's too painful and uncomfortable, and I just really don't like it. And that's what I'm curious about, is working with that 10%.
Well, I think there's a very kind of honest, self-honesty that's needed to know whether we're avoiding what we need or whether there's a certain percentage that we just shouldn't go any deeper. Because again, even using this metaphor, we're human. We can't live in the depth. We got to come up to the surface and breathe. If we stay down there too long, we're going to drown. So every human being has to find a personal practice of what's your migration between depth and surface? What is it that makes you the most healthy? So there are parts, I think, that we have to accept. No, we can look down there, but we can't live down there. We're creatures that cross depth and surface. Now, the parts that we don't want to face, oh man, that's why we need friends. We need honest friends who say, you know, I know you don't want to do this, but I think you have to, and I'll help you. maybe you can help me when I face what I don't want to really face. So I think that there's no getting around that, you know, because what's not integrated in our lives is repeated. That's another archetype. So we can run around and avoid things. And that doesn't mean that this is not to say that timing isn't involved. It's totally, I think, natural to circle things and even for years until the rightness is there. But only you and me will know in our hearts, am I moving closer to something through right timing, or am I simply in denial and avoiding the next doorway in my maturation of spirit?
I'm curious to know, Mark, how writing, being a writer and helping people with their own writing process, writing as a self-discovery process, how that type of writing can be a tool, can be part of the self-acceptance process, in your view?
Oh, yeah, I think it's a huge part of it. And, you know, through my cancer journey, I became very committed to less committed, I'll put it this way, less committed to the journey of writing as creating great art or products, and more committed to the expressive journey of healing. That the expression and writing is one way of that. It's a way to stay in conversation with both self and the journey of acceptance. It's a way to stay in conversation with our depth and our surface, and a way to uncover what is our personal practice of being here. So I think that, you know, our authentic center, which is what I like to call our voice, that's really the tuning fork by which we know the experience of oneness. That's how we know if we're close to what matters, when we feel that authentic kind of hum in our heart. And I know of really no way to exercise that hum of oneness than to have an active life of expression. And writing is one of the closest and easiest ways to access that, whether we ever show what we write to anybody or not. It's a way to really evolve, the Sufis have a term about polishing the heart till it's a mirror of the world. And I think that self-expression is one of the practices that does that.
I'm wondering if you might have a writing exercise that you could recommend, just a sort of general introductory exercise to someone who's struggling with self-acceptance in some area of their life. Maybe it's a body image issue or some other thing that they've just been struggling with really for a long time.
Yeah, I think, you know, one journal question that I might offer would be, to start by getting in a quiet place and just being still for a while, but to describe a time when you first had a sense of your own aliveness. Was that as a child? Was it in the playground? Was it first being with a friend? Was it your first experience of wind through your hair? What was it? Can you describe a time when you had your first experience of aliveness? And I would journal that. And the second part would be, can you describe a time when you felt pulled away from that aliveness? When something got in the way, maybe it was a body image, maybe it was being rejected, maybe it was being wounded by a parent, or maybe it was losing a job, or I don't know. So you see what I'm asking, inviting people, and very transparently, to enter and describe a time when you first felt your own aliveness. And then later, and I wouldn't do these at the same time, describe a time when you felt a moment where you were pulled away from that aliveness. What happened? And then the third part, maybe a week later, would be, look at both of these and journal what you learn about the circumstances around knowing your aliveness and the circumstances around being pulled away from your aliveness. What can you learn about your own patterns? And if we were to take it one step farther, then I would say a week even after that, sit down with a trusted friend or loved one and talk this over. Get somebody else's eyes on it and see what you learn.
I'd be curious to know a little bit from that exercise, if you used yourself as an example, what you might share about what you learned about yourself from doing that type of exercise.
You know, I love that about you. I knew you were going to ask that. Okay. So, you know, I think, and because you asked about being a poet, so I think that, you know, early on, I didn't know to call it being a poet or how I saw the world, but early on, I knew my own aliveness by how the world spoke to me as a little boy. When I was alone, I felt an incredible aliveness that I didn't feel in the presence of others. So that was, you know, early on. I think this is also typical of artists. When I entered school, you know, grade school, I think I encountered where I began to try to share some of what I felt as a little boy alone out in the world by myself. And it was not received well. It was seen as peculiar or ignored or dismissed. And so I felt muffled and I questioned whether, did I really experience this myself? I think this is a very ordinary experience, whether you're an artist or not. It gets to the heart of self-acceptance, really, and the trade-off between, you know, we often find who we are in solitude, and then we want company. And then we're often challenged, do we give away who we are in order to belong? And this is a constant between solitude and community that we go through our whole lives. So I think that was the case. And what I learned from that, and you know, I say this in a couple of sentences, but clearly I don't think I learned this until probably late adolescence or until I was in college, you know. So I struggled with this. It was very a painful kind of, on the one hand, feeling a definite acceptance of I was definitely getting something from life that felt real and alive and dynamic. And then whenever I would go to kind of try to get company with it, it just wasn't always working. You know, I would finally, I think in college, I finally started to have a few dear friends and I didn't feel completely, you know, off the wall. But it took me, you know, until my college years to realize that, you know, if people truly love you, they want to understand who you are and not prune who you are. And so it gave me the courage to keep putting out what my direct experience of life was over hiding it. And, you know, trying to find relationship through that. Yeah.
It really sounds like what you're pointing to here in terms of self-acceptance is, can we accept this, you know, you called it the voice. Can we accept our unique way of being and seeing and expressing ourselves in the world? Is that okay, even if it's not uniformly and universally well received? Can we do it?
Well, and I think this is one of the problems of our age is, and why we have fundamentalism in so many directions globally, is that we have somehow adhered to the notion that we fear difference and variety, that we can only welcome sameness. And the truth is, we need everybody's unique vision to live, to participate in a living universe that is whole. So we hurt ourselves when we push people who are not us away. And I think, you know, this speaks to the word genius. The word genius in our time, it means a particular brilliance of a gift. You know, Mozart was a genius. Einstein was a genius. But the original definition of genius means attendant spirit. This is where the word genie comes from. And so it wasn't reserved for the particularly magically gifted individuals. Everybody has a genius. Everybody has an attendant spirit, a soul, Atman, Dharma, whatever we want to call it. And so self-acceptance has everything to do with staying in relationship with our attendant spirit, with our particular genius that helps us become who we are in the world.
Now, you have a poem, Mark, that I totally love called Breaking Surface, and I think it's right on point here, and I wonder if you'd share that with us.
Sure. I wrote this years ago for my students, actually. It's called Breaking Surface, as you said. Let no one keep you from your journey. No rabbi or priest, no mother who wants you to dig for treasures she's misplaced. No father who won't let one life be enough. No lover who measures their worth by what you might give up. No voice that tells you in the night it can't be done. Let nothing dissuade you from seeing what you see or feeling the winds that make you want to dance alone or go where no one has yet to go. You are the only explorer, your heart the unreadable compass, your soul the shore of a promise too great to be ignored.
Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. It's a joy.
But now, before we end our conversation, I'm going to ask you one final question.
Okay.
And I'm just going to go ahead and I'm going to spill it out here and say it. One of the things that impresses me, Mark, so much about you is the feeling of your open and warm heart. And I hear it in your voice and in your writing, and I know it from the times that I've been in your presence. And it seems to me that that open, warm heart and being able to develop that in ourselves is really, in many ways, the fruition of self-acceptance in some way. And I'd just be curious to know what you have to say about that, how self-acceptance relates to this opening in the heart.
Oh, yeah. Well, first, thank you. I appreciate your kind thoughts on that. And I do think it's very key to what we're talking about. I think that it has to do with the long, hard journey of loving ourselves. Loving that piece in us that has lived forever and listening to it and letting it show itself despite whoever we run into that says, I don't understand, or that scares me, or go away. And I think for me, I have felt, and this was definitely brought to another level for my cancer journey, that I have no choice but to lean into life and be fully here, which means meeting the world with my heart. Otherwise, being hidden, there is a growing distance, like a callus or like a cataract that grows over the eye, that starts to grow over the heart between me and the world. And that is more damaging and more scary than any rejection I could meet in the world. And I guess I'm devoted to that. I believe that, and I don't question that. And when each of us meets the world with that kind of honest vulnerability, there are no strangers in the heart.
I've been speaking with Mark Nepo. With Sounds True, Mark has published several different audio programs, including an audio learning series called Staying Awake, The Ordinary Art, and an audio program called Holding Nothing Back, Essentials for an Authentic Life. SoundsTrue.com, many voices, one journey. Thanks for listening.